It's Helping Hand, HPR1 stations every week, and then appearing online at HawaiiPublicRadio.org, where our Helping Hand segments are archived online. Every Friday afternoon, we try to put the spotlight with Helping Hand on an organization or event in the community that offers assistance to the disabled and other folks who are in need. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are learning about DCAB, the Disability and Communication Access Board, and in particular about emergency preparedness relating to folks with disabilities. We have a very special guest, a new guest from a returning organization, and it is Planner ADA Coordinator Debbie Jackson with DCAB, the Disability and Communication Access Board. Debbie, welcome to HPR, and I know you've been on before, so welcome back to HPR.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
It's a great thrill, and really appreciate the myriad of services that you guys offer for folks who are disabled, and probably one listening to the program over the last year or so that Helping Hand's been on almost 2 years. They may remember the other feature or similar organizations that try to help out folks with information. And before we get into specifics and specifically the area that we're going to talk about, emergency preparedness for folks with disabilities, if you can, in general, for everyone joining our conversation, explain what DCAB is.
Yes, we are. I hate to use this word, but we're a public systems advocate for people with disabilities. So that means we don't take direct client services. So we don't have a caseload of individuals with disabilities. Anybody from the public can call in, ask a question. That includes state government, people that are just interested in the topic, people with questions about disabilities.
So it could be someone who is a professional who might have to take care of a disabled person. It could
Correct.
Be a family member. It could be someone who's disabled who has questions. If you can, give an example of, I'm trying to paint a picture first for, as we talked about before, folks who are listening who may have a disabled loved one. In their life, maybe they're disabled, they might be running into areas of concern, they might have roadblocks, typically the kinds of things that maybe people might call about that these are ways you guys can help out.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we get a lot of calls from people, especially about service animals.
Okay.
So that can be somebody that owns a business, somebody that has a question about service animals, somebody that has a dog that calls in and says, well, how can I get my animal trained to become a service dog? Mm-hmm. We get questions about people going into a building saying it has stairs in front of it. Isn't that illegal?
So people, okay, so a lot, so some of the questions you get, in addition to people calling about a lot of different questions relating to service animals, you get accessibility. I'm trying to get into a place and it's not accessible. And I'm trying
right.
to make it sure, is that what it
right.
is?
Okay. Right.
What are some other things that
people call just to see if they can offer a service to people with disabilities, saying that, you know, I have a friend that has a disability. I'd like to volunteer. Can I volunteer at your office or is there someplace I can volunteer to work with people with disabilities?
That's outstanding. So you get calls from good-hearted folks who just want to do good, too, when they hear about DCAB.
Right.
That's cool. And some of the areas that you guys work in generally, when you think about, we know the area we're going to talk about with you, but other folks in the DCAB, if you can just in a general sort of way, just paint a picture of some of the areas they're working on so that it kind of maybe turns a light bulb on if someone's listening and goes, yeah, maybe, you know, either they're interested in that area or they have a concern about that area.
Right. We have one area of our office that are two parents of children with disabilities, and they help people get through the educational system.
Mm.
So they work on individual educational plans for their students.
And getting the accommodations that are
right.
often mandated for
right.
their children.
And we do have one person that works with communication access needs. So if somebody calls in and says, I need a sign language interpreter, how do I get one? Or I have some sign language skills. How can I get certified to work as an interpreter? And that person can help them.
Yeah, there's a wide range of services, and that's why we paint that, because with Debbie, we're going to dial in on the very important, especially in an island state, the only island state, emergency preparedness for folks with disabilities. But I just want to kind of let people know there's a lot of things that could come from reaching out to DCAB if you have a concern, if you have, and it can often be when you have a disability or you have someone who a loved one who's facing disability, it's hard to accept sometimes that it's it becomes much more difficult sometimes to get the things that you need done. And that's why there are so many organizations trying to provide a roadmap and just try to help it, because there's so many questions that come up, so many organizations, so much involved. And DCAP can be a critical one in the community. Let's talk about emergency preparedness for the disabled. How'd you get involved in this particular area?
Well, actually, I never even thought about emergency preparedness, even though we live on an island and I should be prepared. I never thought about it before 2005, before Hurricane Katrina. Mm. And then there were so many things that happened with them. We even got some of the survivors of Hurricane Katrina to come to Hawaii and live in Hawaii for a while until their home was repaired. And we had heard a lot of stories about people with disabilities couldn't get out of their homes, or people that took care of people with disabilities that wouldn't leave, or people with disabilities that had animals, pets, service animals, that didn't want to leave their homes and their animals. And they didn't survive.
So it inspired you to...
Right. And so what we wanted to do here is, since we're an island and we have limited resources here, it really spurred us on to thinking about the issue of, well, what if something happened? Like, what if we got another Hurricane Iniki here? What would we do? And if it hit Oahu, where the largest portion of the population is, what would we do? And we didn't have any plans in place for people with disabilities.
What has been put into place?
Well, we have looked at different options. What happened was, I got a group of people from the state, the county, the private sector, businesses, disability agencies, et cetera. We all came together and we sat down and we spoke about the issue. And people with disabilities also were involved in the group, because we're thinking we need to hear from people with disabilities, because we don't know what their needs are. Even though we provide services for them, unless you have a disability, you don't know what somebody needs.
And disability is such a general word. It really affects so many different people in different ways. The needs of someone who does not have sight versus someone who's in a wheelchair could be really, really different.
Right. And we do have a good transportation system with the bus here. And so a lot of people don't have cars. But one of the things I learned was that during a disaster, during an emergency, all you have to do is be on the street. If you wave a bus down, the bus will stop and take you to the nearest shelter. And I never knew that. And so we learned things like that along the way. And then we also learned that people with disabilities do need lift-equipped vehicles. Most of our buses are lift-equipped, but they can only handle like two wheelchairs.
Right.
At a time. So we learned some of the limitations in the system.
Meaning they can only, the capacity to have the wheelchair rider on board, they can only have two wheelchair riders on one of those giant buses at
once.
Is that because there's just not a space for the wheelchair to be on the bus?
Right. And there's only equipment to tie down.
One or two.
Yeah.
I get it.
Two wheelchairs. And then if the bus is to capacity already with riders, then we're going to have to ask somebody to stand up or move so that we can put somebody in a wheelchair and have them safe by, tying them down.
Yeah, those are really important concerns. So it is so people who are disabled and they're becoming more tuned in as we talk. What is the, do you guys come up with a protocol? Is there something online? Is there a way that you're kind of advising people on different situations?
Well, our plan is online from 2009, but since it's from 2009, a lot of it is older information, and some of the things we're working on then, like to identify how many beds in the state there are in adult residential care homes for people with disabilities. And we identified the beds in 2009, and now we even have them online so that the first responders will know where those beds are and where potentially people are.
So if they're relocating someone who's disabled that needs specialized medical care, they're going to know about in a much more rapid fashion where they're transporting that individual?
Right, where the person is to go and pick them up and transport them. And one of the things I've been working on lately also is for tourists. Because we do have tourists with disabilities that come in.
Sure.
A lot of times they plan ahead, so they call to find out information like, is the bus system accessible? Which island is the most accessible with public transportation? How can I rent a vehicle with a lift? and things like that. And so we're working on getting tourists with disabilities, how we're going to address that. So we're working with Hawaii Emergency Management Agency on developing a plan on how to move people with disabilities, especially tourists, off the island if we have an emergency.
That's a lot. It's a lot to consider. What are the critical, are there critical areas of that need to be improved on that you see that right now you guys are trying to fix?
Well, what we're working on, especially with the Department of Health, because we're attached to the Department of Health, is adult residential care homes. Because when managers of the home have an individual in the home, for each individual, they're supposed to have an emergency plan. And if the person has a disability, they need to have a plan, and the plan needs to be checked annually. And during Iniki, one of the things that happened was the adult residential care home manager dropped the person off at a hospital. And that's not appropriate if the person doesn't have medical care that they need. So it ties up the system. So we're trying to work on things like that.
That's a great example. You're saying, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's some really serious stuff, and you're trying to get people prepared. So if and when that day comes that there is an emergency, you're not just dropping some disabled person off at a hospital.
Right. Because especially if they don't have any acute care needs, they don't need to be there. They are now part of your family. So their plan should be, what are you going to do with them? Are you all going to go to a shelter?
Right. And is the shelter accessible?
Right.
Will it have what they need? If they're on dialysis, how will that be accommodated? Certain kinds of medical requirements, catheters. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a long list of ways that that's important for the blind and visually impaired, which we cover on the program quite a bit. How do they get the EAS system alerts? I remember when we had some guests on. And they felt that the TV did not really interrupt programming. Instead, there was a visual crawl on the bottom of the screen. But how would people who are visually impaired get the information? I know we have the sirens, but in addition to the sirens, is there something?
Right. Well, now I recently saw an EAS message go across where it did come across in the crawl first, but then it was red. There's a little bit of a time delay, but it is red now.
So it interrupts the audio on the air.
Right. So they should be turning it off, the audio.
Okay, so that's how that would work for the for the blind with the EAS. And in assistance for the mobility impaired, they're basically left to have to reach out. I mean, it's an issue of do you guys go as far as identifying like on a map almost everyone, all right, here's the community, these are the residents that are disabled, so that the first responders have that known in advance?
Well, one of the things that we work with FEMA on this,
sure.
The Office of Disability Integration and Coordination is the office we work with in particular, and they were just here to do a training for us, a two-day training, and one of the things that's discouraged is a registry. Now, that doesn't mean that a service-providing agency couldn't identify where their clients are. And there are other agencies like Meals on Wheels that has a client list.
Why is it discouraged?
Well, because people, when they sign up for a registry, they feel that they are going to be the first ones rescued. And the emergency responders are usually busy responding to whatever the disaster is or the emergency is in that particular time. So the person may not be addressed until a few days to a week later. So that's why we don't encourage a registry. But what Honolulu Police Department did at the beginning of September was they started a new program called Smart 911, which is like a self-registry where the person can go to a website if they have internet access and they can register themselves, but then they're also responsible for updating their information. So at least the police department will know where they are. So when they're addressing a 911 call, they will know that a person at that particular address, if they've registered themselves and they have a profile, that they have a medical need, or if they take particular medications.
That's not a bad thing. You know? That's kind of, in some ways, it's like related to having a healthcare directive in some care.
And in And what's good about it is this system is a national database. So if you travel to another state and they have Smart 911 and you have a profile, the profile will show up there.
That's less about disasters, though, and more about just a general day-to-day keeping disabled folks on the radar with responders. Right.
But it does give you some basis to that, because from this program, because I had researched the program in 2005 when it first started, and that was the only program it had. But now they have Smart Prepare, which links up into an emergency preparedness system. Mm. So if we ever decided to get a program like that, because you have to pay for the service, then that would also be available.
Who would have to pay for the service?
Whichever agency links into it. Like in this case, because Honolulu Police Department is responsible for 911, they pay for the service.
Okay.
So even
you mean they pay to implement Smart 911, the cost of running the website, getting the material, right? Because someone has to input it and do it all.
Well, the person inputs it
themselves, but it has to be managed in some way online, the information once they add it. Well, that's good to know. I mean, and that is something. What are other things that you think that I haven't asked you that are just important to get out there? And forgive me if I didn't dial in on one or two.
Oh, that's right. We also have, the county also has set up tsunami maps. And so on the city and county of Honolulu and in the other counties also, you can type in your address on the website. You go to the county website to Civil Defense Agency, and you can type in your address, and they'll tell you whether you're in or out of a tsunami zone. And they've improved the map so that they have what's called an extreme tsunami zone. So if there is a very large event, it could go farther inland than usual. The maps have been extended for that, so people can go and look at the maps online.
That's
and they
good.
Can even call their civil defense agency and get a copy of the map if they wanted to see it.
Right, and those are important. And part of what we're learning today is, when you're disabled or you have a disabled loved one, you have to do a lot of reaching out and figure this stuff out. There are things there, but you need to get registered. You need to know about them. You need to take advantage of some of this information. And you guys are a great way to, I guess is what you're also saying, is if you want to be up to speed on being ready for a disaster and you have a disabled person or loved one, reach out to DCAB. Mm-hmm. Explain who you are, where you live, and what your situation is, what your disability is, what the disability of your loved one is. And you guys, in essence, will make sure that they know about the things they need to do to plug in. And you can say, hey, well, have you registered for the Smart 911? Have you done this, that? Mm-hmm. Is that basically a good piece of advice?
Yes. And also, one of the things we try and work on with emergency preparedness is that first and foremost, it's an individual responsibility to be prepared.
Right.
So you get your kits together. So our office does have a listing of information for what to pack in your go kit, your readiness kit. And especially if you have a disability or you have a service dog, we do have a list we can provide. We do offer those at when we have the disaster resilience fairs in the different communities. Mm. We offer that. The last one is coming up October 24th of this year, 9 to 1 o'clock, and it's at Mililani High School cafeteria. And so we'll have a booth there. So come and see what we've got. We also have with us at the booth two trainers that come out to train people with disabilities how to prepare, how to get their kits together, how to make their plan.
What do you need else in terms of volunteers, other support from the public for people who are listening and they just are inspired and they want to help out? What's available for them to do to help you?
Our office does work with the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency, as well as the county, in doing exercises. And for the past 2 years, we worked on what's called Makani Pahili, the annual hurricane exercise. And I worked to try and get actual people with disabilities to come out to act or
to help you guys, role play so that you work out how the exercise, so that you learn from the exercise.
So the first responders will know how to interact directly with a person with a disability, how it is to interact with a deaf person.
So you're looking for extras.
We are. Always.
That's a great thing.
And there is an exercise coming up. Department of Health is doing one in April of 2016 on the 28th. So call our office if you'd like to volunteer.
And that's a wonderful way to help get the fine tuning there right. for the system, which is what that, right? That's a good
right.
way of describing it.
Because we have to practice.
Absolutely. Totally. I mean, anything. I mean, I get it. Totally. It's, you know, you want to make a good pizza. You don't just grab the dough and wing it, right? You got to really right. get it together and try hard. I'm with you. 586-8121. Maybe you want to do any kind of, you've heard ways you could brush up if you're getting further into sign language and you want to go further and help people. If you want to learn how you can be of use in any kind of situation, 586-8121 to help out the disabled. dcab@doh.hawaii.gov is the email, health.hawaii.gov/dcab, the website. Easy to remember because at hawaiipublicradio.org, all of this information is there, and you can find it and grab it at that point. And you can find all of our other Helping Hand guests and hear our full-length interviews with everyone that we have on the segment. Debbie Jackson is Planner ADA Coordinator, DCAB, Disability and Communication Access Board. Things that we didn't cover that you want to get in, anything that I didn't leave. And remember, the door is always open, so you can always come back. You can always have other people from DCAB on, other areas that you want to cover or explore. I want to be here and help you.
Right, because our office also, I didn't mention it before, but DCAB does do the handicapped parking renewals. The county will issue the placards if you need to park in an accessible parking stall. And we do the renewals by mail. So that's always a busy part of our office. Plus, for state and county buildings, we review all of the design blueprints that go through to ensure that state and county buildings are renovated or built accessibly according to ADA.
Yeah, you guys serve as the public advocate of persons with disabilities by providing advice, recommendation on legislation, rules, policies, procedures, plans relating to people with disabilities, their civil rights, their service needs. And as you were just mentioning there, Debbie, establishing guidelines, making sure that places are accessible for folks. And they also issue administrative rules, utilization of communication access services. As we were mentioning, sign language interpreters, real-time captioners, guidelines determining the qualifications for folks who would be doing that. And they administer, as she mentioned, the statewide program for the parking placards for the disabled. I really do appreciate you coming on the program. I appreciate all that you guys do. If there's ever anything I can do in particular, don't even hesitate to mention it. But on behalf of all the disabled folks that you try to make life easier for, thank you very much for doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much for the invitation to join you today.